News Talk 1400 WOND Pleasantville, Atlantic City, and online at WONDradio.com.
Nina Feld is an accomplished author, and she's a very interesting story. Her father was a Nazi Holocaust survivor, and the way in which he survived and what he did with his life after that is absolutely stunning. I've been reading about the story, and I have some clips and things, but I'd like Nina to tell everybody how she came about the story and what she found out from her father, because that's the part of the story that really makes me... You think you know somebody, and then you don't, and you find out all these things. So, Nina Feld, welcome to Fire and Ice.
Thank you so much. This is an honor.
Oh, it's my honor. Thank you. Let's get into how you... who your father was, how you found out about this story, and what you found.
Well, I grew up in Manhattan. My father was Walter C. Wolf. He owned a very prominent furniture store chain called Bon Marché, which was the precursor to IKEA. We had five stores at the height. And so I grew up, you know, on Lower Fifth Avenue. I went to wonderful schools, and we spent every summer in Europe. And my job was to be a good student, learn all the languages I was supposed to. And I never really grew up knowing that I was the child of a surviving refugee. And then shortly before my father died, we were having a moment, and I was sitting on the edge of his bed, and the sun was shining, and he said, "I have something for you, just a minute," just kind of like that. And he got up, and he walked to a closet, and he pulled out this green, army green metal box. And I opened it and coughed, because it was that dusty, and it was a pile of letters. And I hadn't really looked at it. When I opened it finally and went through it, and counted them, there were 700 letters home from World War II on everything from packing paper, like dossier paper, to Nazi stationery, which, you know, if you go on the website, and I'll give them to you later, you can see examples of it. And down to this light blue stationery with his initials in the corner, which turned out to be his recovered bar mitzvah stationery. And eventually I translated all of the letters from French to English, because they were in French, and I wound up writing a memoir. And as I researched and began to understand, I realized that he had never spoken about this issue at all, except for a couple of tiny little details.
Let's actually give out that website now, Nina, because we've got listeners all over the world, and they would like to look at this while we're talking, because it'll give them a point of reference. So go ahead and give that website out.
The website with all of the archival material and stuff is, I'm going to spell it, it's called sheremamo.com, C-H-E-R-E. M is in mommy, A, M is in mommy, O.com. And the other is nwfeld.com. And on both of these websites, you will get to know the project and some articles that I've written.
Now, what did you have a chance, after you've opened this box and you went through all of the things? I know that you were on your dad was on his deathbed when he made this revelation to you. Did you get a chance to talk to him about the letters after?
Eventually, I archived them, and I took them one by one by one, and I put them in order of date. And he marveled at that, and he did see it, and he sort of looked through it, but he never really elaborated upon it. And I hadn't even read the letters yet. And something had happened, and my best friend started to write a book, and I began to get jealous in the best possible way. I just wanted to be part of something, and it occurred to me that I had an entire treasure trove to go look at, and my son was 7 at the time, and I began to translate it, and I began to give him little pieces of it. As I began to do that, I started to realize I knew virtually nothing about World War II, because I never listened in history class and was not a history buff. And every time I had a question, I began to Google an answer. And as I Googled an answer, a whole other level of who I was, where I came from, and who my father was began to evolve.
Yeah, your father was a Holocaust survivor. I mean, that's what he was.
Well, There you have to be very, very careful because of the semantics. Because he is a survivor and he was never in a camp, let me explain. They left their last legal, he was born in Germany, he went to boarding school in Switzerland, and their last legal residence, which is now part of the EU complex in Brussels, this huge building, their last legal residence was in Brussels. They left 4 days before the Nazis bombed, and on May 6, 1940, and they began to run. And for 16 months until September 12, 1941, when they arrived in the United States, they were on the run. They were bombed at and shot at. And all the letters that I received were during the time that he was in the Army. So he was a surviving refugee. Because now, he was never in a camp.
Now tell me, how did he, your father, though he was not a United States citizen, actually became an intelligence officer with the United States Army. How did that work?
Well, a lot of these refugees, and there's another movie called The Ritchie Boys, were shuttled back and forth, almost like enemy, as we know it today, an enemy combatant. They weren't sure who these people were, because this group of youngsters, anybody that was in the Army who was a refugee was considered this way. They were shuttled back and forth in the medical corps until they finally began, they created Camp Ritchie, which is a precursor to the CIA. And they finally began to discover that these kids knew everything about the cultures from which they came and could blend in seamlessly. And so what happened is he became an American
spy.
Citizen. Sorry?
He became a spy.
Yeah, he became kind of a spy. But he went back 2 weeks after Roosevelt died. He finally returned to Europe as an intelligence officer, and his job was to vet out war criminals. So he was at Getty Air Force Base, and he must have gone through, I forget what the number is, but I believe it's something crazy like 80,000 prisoners, one, two, you know, thousands of them. And he would vet out war criminals, and he even came across, you know, people with his name, one of whom was Jewish, whom he let go, and another, as he would say, customer of his turned out to be a major Nazi with the last name Wolf.
So I take it that he didn't really like to talk about this a whole lot. And I, at the top of your website, you have a paper from, it's actually written on Nazi letterhead, and it says, our new policy, let's forget about the past and let bygones be bygones. I'm getting a sense that your father had quite a sense of sarcasm, because he also said the Nazi Party, and underneath that, underneath their letterhead, he wrote the party of the good-hearted and innocent, sauerkraut-eating, Jew-loving German people, independent Austrian branch.
He was a riot. I mean, and this was done in part for the censors. So the letters home and the way you and I text and email, he was handwriting all of these letters, and it gave him possibly a sense of closure. So this was for the censors, so to make sure that he was here writing home on Nazi stationery, wishing everybody a happy Rosh Hashanah, that because they were in French and not in English, they could tell that there was no danger there.
Yeah, we take very much in this country for granted the freedoms and the liberties that we do have, and the notion of sending a letter and or texting freely without any adverse consequences from the government. We really, modern Americans really have no idea of the level of infiltration into your personal life you had to go through in the 40s to survive. I know my grandfather was a part of the civil watch, and it was his job to walk around town at night to make sure that A, nobody was out in the street, B, that there were no street lights on, and C, nobody had any lamp lights in their home that could give the position away to the Germans. And we really don't understand what it's like to lose those freedoms. And the further away from incidents like 1945 that we get, the further back in the memory log it goes. And I, you know, I'm watching politics today, and I'm seeing what people, you know, oh, that's all right. We don't need that Second Amendment, right? You know what? The hell with the First Amendment, too. We don't really need that. You know, who's going to take that from us?
No, you know what's fascinating is that This is history, and in some ways for kids it's ancient history. And I've been so fortunate with this project to be invited to inner city schools in the tri-state area to speak about this project. And I'm going to answer that question in the way that what is absolutely amazing is the level of interest with these children who come to me and write to me afterwards. One child said, my great-great-grandmother was a slave and you made me want to learn more. And just before the Boston bombing, I was having a conversation with someone and I said to them, you know, the Big Brother thing, we're constantly watched, and, you know, I can't believe that this Orwellian idea came true. And then I think it was really a few days later that the Boston bombing happened, and I thought to myself, thank God it came true, because you can do time-lapse photography from start to finish to the arrest of the bomber and see what had happened. And so we lose something, but we're gaining something. And that's why even this project, although it refers to World War II, and we, you know, are commanded never to forget, is a helpful thing because it brings history down to the level of one person, one family, the issues, the things he observed, the things he saw, and then it doesn't become just about dates. It just becomes an individual story.
Well, what struck me about the Boston bombing was at one point the police and the SWAT and the feds and the state police and the governor said to everyone, get inside your homes, do not come out, there is a curfew, you're not allowed to go to the store, you're not allowed to do anything, while these freewheeling, jackbooted cops are running all over town with the very SR-15s that everyone and everybody else is being told, bad, 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 you can't have those, you're locked in your house. And then the police come up and go, open up the door, we're coming in. Wow. And everybody's saying, come on in, it's okay. You don't need a search warrant. I watched The Pianist the other night. Beautiful movie about a Polish Jew who was one of the world's renowned, and it's a true story, one of the world renowned pianists who was captured, and actually his piano playing saved his life because a German officer found a piano in the gutted, and I mean gutted, Jewish ghetto that was bombed out, but one house survived and it had a piano in it. And this German officer loved to play the piano. This guy's hiding up in the attic and comes down and gets caught one day, but that actually saved his life. But this country, we have no idea how quickly freedom can be snuffed out and gone forever.
Yeah, no, it is frightening. And projects like these, I have learned, because right from the beginning of this, people have been unbelievable with this the world over. I've had such a reaction to this. It's a necessary thing. And the most important people are the children, because to bring this, to pay it forward is the most important thing, so that we can learn not to repeat these things and to understand that it's happened before. And, you know, I have to say that I've come up against a wall with publishers, because they all feel this is not a blockbuster. It's an amazing project. Museums want the archive. And here I've had 1,000 people say to me, when, where, how can I get a copy of it? But because publishing is on its ear, they feel that, you know, we're not going to make this a blockbuster. Can't sell $1 million. And I, worth of books that I think actually one by one by one, I mean, I've had professors at Columbia University tell me that they would use it as a first-year college history book. So,
of course, and you're shooting too high at the wrong target. I've been through the same thing with my these big houses, and I'll give you a true story. I was going through and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to call these publishers myself, because every person that's ever read any of my books is, why aren't you published? Well, because it's big corporate, and big corporate doesn't want to talk to V. Scott Makeham about anything, because who the hell is he? And yeah, he could have a great book, but we're not investing in that. He didn't sleep with anybody out in the open public in the middle of a football field with a rock star. So why would we be interested in this? Your book, your story needs to be shuttled in directly into the people that care most about it. And I would start talking to the Anti-Defamation League. I would start talking to the people that this hits directly. And don't actually look into self-publishing, but look into a smaller publisher. Chicken Soup for the Soul went to no one knew who this shack was. They were capable of printing 1,000 units on the first pass. Those 1,000 units were gone in a day. That's where you need to start with stuff like this, because this isn't mainstream. This isn't normative. That's why my show is not mainstream. It's not normative. People listen to this show because they want to learn something. And this, you being a guest on my show is why I do what I do, because people do love this stuff.
I made a big decision over the past week, and it's taken, you know, a very long time to decide this, but I've had the most amazing reaction in 24 hours that I think I'm doing the right thing. I've decided that I want to raise the money so that I can have a phenomenal editor and self-publish it and get it out. So what I did was I learned about this recently, and I went on GoFundMe.com, and I created GoFundMe.com/someday you'll understand, the title of the book. And within 24 hours, I've had donations, including a high school English teacher who saw me on Facebook. It's amazing.
Well, this story needs to be told. I mean, listen, your father was obviously very, very well off when he was a businessman. But there was one paragraph in one of his letters that when I read it, I thought, wow. Where was this guy in his framework when he wrote this? Because he had to have been just so glad to just be alive or be outside of this Nazi unit. That, let me read it. It says, as far as my plans after the war, I might consider a career as a truck driver. I've been driving a truck most of the time, but I still like the Jeep better.
He was like the Jewish John Wayne. I mean, he was bombed at and shot at. One of the most amazing, there are two amazing stories. And if you go on the website, they're there. And also within the manuscripts. But one of the stories that I did hear growing up was, because my father loved to pick berries no matter where we were. Well, one day they were hiding. After they left Brussels, they went along the Normandy coast, and they wound up living for 6 weeks under. They left with an American friend, and he taught them to be Americans. And my grandfather pretended to be the chauffeur. My grandmother pretended to be to be shell shocked. My aunt and my father pretended to be Mr. Cresser's children, and they found their way to this chateau in Noyelles-sur-Mer, which is on the Normandy coast, and they lived there for 6 weeks pretending to be an American family. And
with a heavy French accent. Time,
no, but these two stories are amazing. During that time, it became the German army headquarters, and so they were living completely out in the open, and the British planes would come, and every day there would be bombings, and every night they would go to the cellar. And there was one officer who had been a famous, and I don't know who he was, but a famous German actor. And he discovered, because he found my aunt's Bible in the trunk of the car, he discovered their real identities, and he went over to them and said, I am not the kind of person that makes those kinds of judgments. And he had a crush on my aunt. Well, my father was out in the garden picking strawberries, and I have actually met somebody who remembers that day. And while he was picking strawberries, bombs dropped. One out of 10 did not explode. He landed in the crater of the unexploded bomb, and the officer who had a crush on my aunt was blown to smithereens. amazing story. And the other quick story with that chateau was that every night they would go downstairs to the wine cellar, and my father at the time was almost 16, and boys, even during war, will be boys. And my father thought it would be a funny thing to do and laughed about it for the rest of his life. He switched the wine bottles for the olive oil bottles, and the Germans just cracked open the bottles and drank olive oil and made themselves sick. I mean, he really, really, he was crazy.
Well, I hope I'm on your early publishing mailing list. Because
I just hope people can, if you
give me the website for that
website,
yeah, GoFundMe. What is that?
Fund it.
Yeah, do that. Huh? Do that website. GoFundMe.com.
I did it already. I mean,
no, do it again. Say it again so people can still go there.
GoFundMe. Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm sorry. GoFundMe.com/someday you'll understand. And I have links to it on both of my websites. And, our goal is to raise, I want this project to be the best it can be because it's had so much incredible support so far. So I want to raise the money, get the best editor and the best publishing package and get it out there and market it to those who really want to see it.
Well, good luck, Nina. I wish you all the luck in the world. I will be waiting to see my copy, and I will have you back on after it's published because there's two more stories. One is, how did you get it published? B, how's the publishing going? And let's talk about some of the stories that we didn't get a chance to get to today because
that would be wonderful.
Too much
and
to
I'm going to send you the links to everything, so maybe if there's a way that you can post them having to do with this interview that people can
I will send you an MP3. Actually, Nick Wargo is sitting right next to me. He is one of our producers. He's going to go in after this, and he's going to send it to you. Real quick, we're 2 minutes from a hard break. What does Cher Mamo mean?
I think it was just my father's nickname for my grandmother. He would just...
Okay, that's... I thought
mom.
It was Mom, Mommy, whatever. Yeah, okay.
I think so. I think it was his nickname for her, because most of the letters do say that.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you taking time out on your Sunday to come on, Nina. Nina Feld, nwfeld.com or cheremamo.com. GoFundMe is at the bottom of the Cher Mamo page, and you can help her out with getting published. And good luck, Nina. Thanks for coming on to Fire and Ice tonight.
And thank you so very much. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure.
We'll be speaking again soon.
All righty, Nina. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
1 out of 10 bombs. That's called fate.
Awesome.
One out of ten bombs. And the guy that had the crush on the aunt gets blown away.
Yeah. Go figure.
That's
huh?
the way it happens if Rabik was sitting here right now. You know, he'd be going, well, you know, in Vietnam, there are 400,000 bullets coming at you. And, you know, the odds were 1 out of 12 was
going to. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good James Rabik.
Wait, I can.
There's 10 or 15 books laying around the studio about different wars. World War II, Vietnam, World War I.
Wait, I can really sound like Rabik. You ready?
Okay, here we go.
Do it.
Ask me a question. Just any question.
Okay, what happened in the War of 1812?
No.
Every time I do that, Kelly's like, you sounded just like James when you did that. I'm like, well, when you've heard no from him as many times as I have, please. Who do we got coming up next? It's 6:06. It is Ethan Brosh.
Cool.
One of the world's foremost guitar players. This guy is magic. I'm going to have Johnny Locke playing his music while we do his interview.
Indeed.
He's partnering up with one of the world's impresario guitar players. We'll have all that when we come back. This is Fire Nights on News Talk. 1400 WOND. Ethan Brosh is up next. Don't go nowhere.
Radio you can depend on.